When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt Kroll. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hello.
Over there. Excited to welcome back Lake Speed Jr., the man who knows all things, lubrication, automotive, and beyond. And we are geeks for this stuff, so we're
obviously
always happy to talk to you. And gluttons for punishment.
I mean, nobody's as nerdy as Lake, but
I can. We all nerd with the best of them.
But Driven Racing Oil's the company website, drivenracingoil.com. We're very much into the diagnostic part. It's a newer thing where you basically draw some blood from the engine, which is the oil. They've always said, you know, well, the oil's your life's blood of the engine. Like, okay, well, if they want to find out how a human is doing in terms of do you have hepatitis C or whatever, let's draw a little blood and check it out. And somebody figured out, hey, let's draw a little engine oil and see what's going on in the anatomy of the engine.
I think these guys have been doing it for a long time with the racing teams, and then they started thinking, hey, maybe everybody wants to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Or everybody should.
Everybody should be doing it, right? Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's if you go back, you know, the history of oil analysis itself goes back to the military. The Navy and the Air Force were doing it in World War II.
Right.
The idea, as opposed to changing parts based on a time schedule, you basically do oil analysis as a predictive maintenance tool. When to change something. Then it got big into – well, Formula One really picked up on it big probably about a decade or so ago when they went to the multi-race engines. Because before, if you were going to rebuild the engine every race, well, then who cares?
Right.
It's just run it, and if it doesn't blow up, then we did good. But when you had the same engine, you had to run multiple times. Well, how do you know the engine's still okay? So the oil analysis gave them a tool to be able to – understand the health of the engine so that they could make a decision, oh, wait, this engine's not any good anymore. It's the risk of blowing up a motor is really great. Change the motor because there was a penalty, you know, to do that. And so the F1 guys really pioneered it. And then when I was at Gibbs, we did it all the time.
Joe Gibbs.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, we're such nerds that when we were driving home from Rennsport and we'd been able to talk to you. I was messing around with the car a little more, but Matt got a chance to talk to you a little more than I did. Matt did about 40 minutes on you analyzing a NASCAR team's engine and you telling them there was a problem with the engine and them telling you there was no problem with the engine because they put it on a dyno and they check compression and leak down and everything else. And you said, you know, the oil doesn't lie. And they said, well, neither does the dyno and neither does our test equipment. And the engine ended up grenading or something, and they ended up coming back to your side of
this. We want to hear that story, not 40-minute version, but we want to hear that story. But it's funny that all the racing teams do this, and now we'll get into what you're doing for consumers, the company and what you're doing. But does it work like a pharmaceutical company? Like you charge us $60 to do it, but when a NASCAR team wants it done, you charge them $1,400? I feel like there's a business model there that would make sense. Those guys on the F1 team, right? Like all they seem like they do is want to spend money for some reason.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the equipment to do it is like $80,000. And I knew a guy that was worked at ExxonMobil, and he actually went. His job was to go to the racetrack and take the samples out of Lewis Hamilton's car. And then go analyze it and then hand it back to the engineer and say, here it is. They did it every time the car came off the racetrack.
It's got to be lock and key.
They don't want the oil samples tainted. Yeah. How do they do – I mean, obviously, they can do anything in a 13-second pit stop these days. But grabbing some oil. How'd they do that physically?
Well, they didn't do it during the pit stops. But,
every race.
Mm-hmm. After but, every time?
After every race,
practice
sorry,
session.
But not, not every,
every
time.
Every practice session.
Every practice session. Yeah. So every time they had a little time.
Well, yeah, because we got you guys one of the pumps. Basically, you could do a sampling pump. They had a spigot. They could just go plug a line into the oil tank, come carcass to the track, pull a little sample out, go over to the machine, put it in. 10 minutes later, the results come out. Here you go.
See, they got the machine on site.
Oh yeah, they had the machine on
yeah,
site.
Yeah, they got the machine.
What
on
do
site.
You? What do
they
we,
don't want to wait no.
for the lay person? What are we looking for in that oil? In a negative or positive? Obviously, any metallic whatever's a bad sign.
Yeah.
But
explain this process.
Explain the process.
What is oil testing?
Let me tell you guys first that this show is brought to you by Castrol Titanium Strong for maximum engine performance and Geico. You can visit geico.com. So, for lay people, what would be the process? Again, like you're a doctor and you're describing taking a blood sample.
Well, that's the best analogy, right? It is like the blood sample, you know, the health of the engine comes from that. And really, there's two things that the testing does without getting into the weeds on how they actually test stuff. The test is going to come back and tell you two things. It's going to tell you the health of the oil. So you can see all the additive package in there. You can see the zinc, the phosphorus. You can see the viscosity. You can see the oxidation, which is kind of the degradation of the oil. You can see all that. But then also you see all the wear metals. So you can see the individual levels of iron or copper or bronze, or I say bronze, but iron or copper, tin, aluminum. All those things, aluminum. So like, for example, with the Kyle Busch motorsports story, you know, the engine came back and the sample had, you know, four times more iron than all the other samples they had sent in all year. It's like, well, okay, there's a problem. And their thing was, well, we leaked it. We dyno tested it. It's fine.
Now, it's a sealed engine. They can't take it apart.
A complete sealed engine. You can't even take the valve covers off.
Right.
As per rules.
Per NASCAR rules. Per the rules, they can't do anything else to it.
Right.
So when they've, you know, all said and done, you know, we checked it twice, and both times it came back. Hey, it's, you know, 160 parts per million. Iron should be 40 is what you're normally running. There's a problem. And when by the time they took it to the engine builder and they took the heads off, well, 7 of the 8 cylinders were beginning to score. So right. The motor was going to blow up the next race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for them, that meant, hey, they're running for a championship right now. You blow up that motor during the race, and now you're out of the championship, not just down $35,000 because you blew up a motor.
Right.
So now you're looking at a, you know, about, well, in this case, because it's a sealed motor from NASCAR, it was within the 500-mile warranty they give them on new engines.
Yeah.
They got the motor for free.
Wow.
Right.
But
they had to use the oil analysis to figure it out.
They would basically, if they had not done the used oil analysis, they would have not known it. They would have run it again. It would have been over 500 miles when it blew up, and then there wouldn't have been a warranty.
So when they sent it back and they got the new engine replaced, they sent it back, and then the engine builder was like, we'll pull the heads off and see, now that we've already swapped out your deal.
Well, actually, you know. So the funny part was, you know, but after we went through the whole thing with them, kind of arguing with them on the oil analysis bit, they finally sent it back to the engine builder, and the engine builder's like, why'd you send it back? And they're like, it's got a problem. No, it doesn't. We dynoed it. We leaked it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And they were like, listen, we got the report. And they're like, okay, well, we'll do some checking. And it was kind of like this thing where we're going to check it. If there's nothing wrong with it, we're going to basically charge you. We're charging you the full kick.
Right.
To put it back together and send it back to you. But when they pulled it apart, they're like, how about that? Yeah, this is a good thing you sent it back because it was about to blow up.
At least they were honest about
it. I was just
going
to say, I like that everyone was honest in this scenario. There's something so mystifying about engine builders where they can tell you whatever they want and you have to believe them.
This oil testing, it seems like it would be an important part of buying a used car now. Especially a vintage car, a car with an expensive engine to build, rebuild.
Exactly. Yep.
It would seem to make sense to say, you know, hey, you're buying this 1960s Jag with an engine that's going to be 30, 40 grand to rebuild if it grenades, and or an old Porsche or Corvette or anything, any vintage or new car. You know, there used to be the whole, oh, is this car have 18,000 miles on it or 118,000 miles on it? Well, the used car guy says 18, but yeah, it's like, I don't know. It could have turned over, but we don't know. I feel like we will know now. And oh, yeah. And I feel like it'll be a part of the report and part of the sales. And I don't know, you tell me what the future is.
Well, it is. It's funny how this whole thing came about. Obviously, when I was at Joe Gibbs Racing, it was something we did all the time. It was just part of our engine building program was we did oil analysis. Then when we spun Driven off as a separate company, it was still one of the tools we used. We just used an outside lab to do it. My experience over time was, some labs are better than others. Not everybody had the same equipment. Not everybody had the same turnaround time and things like that. So that when we finally moved our business out of Gibbs, we were no longer there. I saw a need in the marketplace for somebody to have this level service for specifically what you're talking about, for pre-purchase inspection, for vintage racing, as well, that there's other people that could utilize that. Driven needs to have has that as a tool, right? When people want to use the oil or whatever brand they're going to use, they need to have a third party independent that can give them truth. And we had a lot of customers coming to us saying, we want a high-end service like you guys used to do for us internally that we can trust, because we don't like the other labs that are out there. Yeah, there's some other labs you can use, but we're not really comfortable with the quality of results and the timeliness. So that's why we kind of started this thing. And, I got my daughter, Caroline. She's the one that's kind of doing the day-to-day part of it, handling it. But one of her biggest customers is a guy that is a Porsche specialist, and he uses it as part of every pre-purchase inspection.
How fast is the turnaround?
Well, you can get it 3 days.
Around? 3 days.
The 3 days is the high end one. That's the $100 one. The standard one is $60, and that's 5 to 6 days.
So someone's going to make a purchase on a car that's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. This should be part of the tire kicking process.
100%. This is like the easiest money you can spend and get the most return on your investment for $60, and you can know the health of the engine.
Yeah.
Yeah, in about a week. So they go to the website.
Or 3 days.
It's Speed Diagnostics. Real original thinking there. is the name of the company, the website, and it's spelled weird. It's only one D, and it ends with an X. So we did all that weird stuff so you could trademark it and do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
Speed Diagnostics, you go to the website,
order the kit,
yeah, and it comes into you, and it basically that fee includes the shipping to you, and that already has the expedited mailer prepaid back in it, as well as the processing, and you get the results emailed to you.
Which makes it so much quicker.
And it's sort of like, it's kind of nice in that I think people are getting comfortable with this, like these DNA test kits and things like that. They just send you out a little thing, you spit into a thing, you send it back to the thing, you get your results. Like it's basically that for your car. DNA of the engine.
It's funny because you were saying the same thing about a doctor. Like these days now, you go to the doctor, you get your physical, get your blood test. They just email you the results.
Right.
Why not? So on that NASCAR engine, you guys were finding that there was too much metal or too much iron or aluminum or something in there, and they were saying it's all fine, but it was scoring the cylinder walls a little bit, and because of that, it was increasing that level of metal in there. So just that little tiny bit, you guys can tell.
You find iron, it's something to do, I'm guessing, with the block or that scoring. You find aluminum, it's a bearings. Or what?
So there's different metallurgy you use in different engines and different parts of the engines. Iron typically is going to be from a valve train, but if it's an iron block motor, it can definitely be from the cylinder bores,
too. Well, they'll all be sleeved with something, right?
Some of the aluminum ones, like a Nicosil, that's like a nickel plating, silicon plating. So
they don't sleeve them?
No, some blocks are not sleeved. Some are
so modern day. There's some aluminum. I mean, back in the day, I think when they had an aluminum block, they would sleeve it with something.
In the old days, yes,
right. Yeah. But now they're just going all whatever with a coating.
Yep.
But you also need to know what the engine is, because you need to. I imagine you would want to know what the engine was in order to help with the diagnostic part.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the reason why everything's online. That's why there's a website, and you basically buy the kit, and you have to register the kit online, because every kit has a unique ID number. So each bottle has its own barcode that's specific to that bottle.
Right.
And you have to go online and then answer, basically register it and answer certain questions. And you can't complete it if you don't answer the questions, because you can't get an analysis that's reference to anything if we don't know what the engine came from.
Right. So there's a database that allows you to compare against other stuff.
Perfect example is fuel.
Yeah.
If you're running a leaded race fuel, then it's going to throw the lead levels way off compared to what is normal in an unleaded engine.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that we need to know what kind of fuel you have to be able to give you proper results. We need to know the mileage so you can calculate the wear rate. This report can, like, we used to use a Caterpillar, because we used to go down the street to the Caterpillar place in Charlotte because they had a lab there, and we would just take it over there and you know, $15, drop it off, and then they would email you the report back a couple of days. But it was one page. It was just the numbers, and I'm a certified oil analyst. That's one of the things I got paid to do when I was at Gibbs, was here, get certified so you can read this. So, but if you don't, if you're not an analyst, good luck. I mean, because it's literally the Caterpillar report. Iron is listed as Fe, which is the right. chemical symbol for iron. Okay, if you know chemistry, great. If you don't, what the hell's Fe? Yeah. Why do I have 160 of it? Is that okay? Is that good, bad? I don't know.
Yeah, what does the number mean?
Right.
Yeah.
So
I'd be in my office like, Lynette, come in here, sweetie. And I just hand it. Yeah. I just hand it off.
Just what does this mean?
You know, so our report's got three pages.
She'd look at it for a second, and she'd backhand me, and she'd go, "I told you it was running lean."
Exactly. So with three pages,
just crumpled up and throw it at me and storm out of the room.
Don't ever ask me stupid questions again.
That's right.
No, so with three pages, the first page is the numbers, and then they're all color coded so that you can see if everything's green, everything's good. If anything's yellow, it means it's borderline. It's still acceptable, but it's borderline. Anything's red means you got a problem. And then the second page goes through and basically describes each one of the tests. So, like the test for iron. Well, what is iron? You know, iron's a chemical, you know, or say it's an element, it's a metal, it's typically found in these kind of parts. And then the third page is what to do if any one of those line items turns up red. So if it is, say, lead shows up red, okay, that's a bearing problem. And no, here's what you need to do and to respond to that. That way you're not just, well, here's your sheet, you know, you're dying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, here's what you need to do to try to get back to good health.
I was going to ask is how detailed can you get? Can you tell the difference between two different types of aluminum? Can you say,
no,
oh, the piston's doing something or the wall is doing something, and you know?
So you can't tell between two different aluminum alloys necessarily, but you can tell, say, for example, if your thing shows up and it's just lead, nothing else, okay, you probably had leaded fuel in there. Whether you checked it or not, maybe you had leaded fuel and you didn't know it. But if it shows up with lead, tin, and copper, which are the three things that make up a trimetal bearing, you know for a fact you have a bearing problem.
Get it? Because it's trimetal.
Trimetal, as in three.
As in three.
All right, let me cool off some of this hot piston talk with the Castrol Edge heat, friction, viscosity breakdown. They rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance up to 10%. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to be stronger under pressure, helps fight friction and deliver maximum levels of performance for your car. Let's go. Castrol Edge, full synthetic, three times stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils. It is Castrol Edge. Unlock the true performance in your car's engine. All right, there's a question up here. So now, guys, opinions on driving moccasins. Okay. Hey, Andrew.
Yeah.
45 Vegas, driving moccasins.
Yeah, so I was hoping you could settle a debate.
All right.
You know, got the friend that says no matter what, driving moccasins a douche move. Mm-hmm. I say it's okay as long as you can back it up with the car.
How much different is the driving moccasin than the driving loafer? Or is it basically
the same?
Kind of the same thing.
Mm.
We love going on loafer detail when we go to the Amelia Island or
the moccasins
Pebble Beach.
Interesting.
We love it. I love finding douchebags with the craziest. I have guys assigned just to photograph guys' feet.
Sonny's been pretty good at it, too.
I got my son all coached up, Max Zapata. Yeah. Although he's letting a few slide through the cracks, like every once in a while. Like, hey, the guy in the Bermuda shorts. What's up?
What's going on?
Like,
those are bright yellow.
Him. Like, go get it, man.
Yeah. Go get a photo of
that. The suedier, the brighter the color, the better.
But the moccasin has like the weird stitching, like almost like the baseball glove stitching or the lace. Do you also own a boat? That's a question. Do you also wear them on a boat?
Look, all
I
is
always
for...
thought douchey too. I thought douchey, but I'm getting older. I'm starting to lean that way.
All is forgiven if you can drive or you can back it up. But if we see you out there at Amelia Island and you're wearing the moccasins and then you climb into your automatic
84 vet,
you just put it in drive, then we got an issue, you know? So I'd have to follow everyone back to their car and do a sort of, it'd be a case moccasin by moccasin sort of issue for me.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm not a fan of the guys. I don't like anybody wearing the garb who's not actually participating in the thing. I'll tell you the craziest one. Many years ago, Jimmy and I were out in New York. They used to send us to New York for the MTV Awards. That Kevin and Bean, the local radio, K-Rock, send the whole morning crew out there. We were out there, and it happened to be during the U.S. Open, and I think like Pat O'Brien, who was like a friend of the show, was calling it, and we ended up getting us a couple of tickets to like the tennis open. And we're like, we never been to a tennis tournament, Flushing Meadows and all that kind of stuff. And we ended up just on a Saturday, like getting on the train and driving out to Flushing. And I started noticing more and more people getting on the train. They're wearing like Fila shorts and they're wearing the shoes and they got the wristbands on and stuff. And I'm like, what are these guys doing? Like, are they playing tennis? And it's like, no, they're just fans.
They're just fans.
Dressed up like tennis players.
Yeah.
Look, I get it. If you're going to Sturgis, you probably have some boots or something. Like, I get there's an element of that. But I don't like the guys who dress like they're going to participate in the event.
Oh, you go to any motocross event, and there's somebody in the stands wearing everything. Wearing the gear.
Well, NASCAR,
wearing
same
the boots.
Thing, right?
Yeah,
there's dudes wearing fire suits in the stands.
Right.
Yeah, there are.
I don't like it.
Which is crazy, because it's always hot.
Right. Yeah. Mike, the people who are wearing them don't want to wear them.
if you own a car, you don't have to dress like that car. If you own a Ferrari, you don't need to get out dressed in red with Ferrari emblems all over your body.
I know, but so many do.
So many do.
But it's a thing where it's like, these guys are rich guys. They always have super beautiful tan calves. That's what I noticed about them. They're no pasty dudes with bird legs.
It could be. It's just like you buy one of these cars, and then all of your buddies are like, he owns a Ferrari. I'm going to buy him a $40 Ferrari hat. And then you're like, now I have to wear the hat or what?
My agent would get me driving shoes, and I wouldn't wear them.
You're being kind.
All right. But wait a minute. Can we agree that the... Oh, yeah. Loafers in full effect. Max Zapata was out taking pictures.
Very awkward doing this, by the way.
I know. Because
I can't see why.
You know why? It's the same.
Oh,
it's
like the red
It's
pants.
The same thing I would run into.
These are all pretty tame. That was all right.
The first one's good. Yeah. The thing, there's a couple things.
Everybody had tan caps.
The scariest part about the loafer, I'd always, whenever we go to Amelia Island or Pebble Beach, wherever we go, I always go assign someone to take pictures of the loafers. The weirdest part is me trying to convey, like, I'd always say to some guy who was like working on the production team or whatever, and like, look, part of the comedy bit we're going to do is we're going to take these douchebags with their crazy suede loafers. And we're just going to, so walk around the crowd. The crazier, the better, the louder, the more obnoxious, the more garish, the better. But you find these rich guys in their rich guy loafers and take a picture. And inevitably, some guy would come walking by and just like penny loafers or something in khakis. And he was like a judge or something. He'd go, oh, here comes some loafers. And I'd go, no.
No, not any loafer.
No, not any loafer, like obnoxious loafer. And they'd go, oh, okay. Oh, there's another guy. And it was another guy in just beige loafers. I'd go, how come it takes so long for me to give you my ideas? Why is it? Why is I Mac Tapata, what is wrong with me that I give you my ideas and you cannot digest them? Not you personally, okay, you. But oftentimes you personally. Like, I think I made it pretty clear. How come people have so much difficulty with that?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they're colorblind.
They blow their wad on the first pair of loafers they see. They don't even know what's coming.
They didn't have crayons.
Why do they not get the gestalt of the joke?
Yeah.
The joke. So, all right. So, Andrew, back to you. I will say.
How do you feel about this conversation?
I like the loafer. I will take the loafer over the high top driving shoe.
Yes.
Because the high top driving shoes effort,
with
man.
With the weird zipper, right, on the side?
Sometimes. I feel bad. I'll tell you why. Remember Carter Lay?
Yes.
Carter Lay. Look, here's a parable for you young kids out there listening, like something you should participate. Or take it to heart is what I'm saying. Carter Lay did the like Celebrity Pro Grand Prix, whatever.
Oh, that's right.
Maybe the year I won it as a celebrity or pro. I just want to say both those. But he was there, and he's a rich guy, and he's from the Lay's potato chip family.
Yeah.
And heir to the Lay's potato chip throne. And he showed up with like a pair of $600 Puma driving shoes, and he was like explaining to me or somebody else, I was overhearing it, that his laced up on the side and not over the down the front, because the ones that did the front cut off circulation, and the side ones were better for circulation, and blah 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 blah.
Oh my.
And then he went out there and he was super slow. And, you know, guys in flip-flops were passing him.
Yeah.
And I remember we did the podcast, and I was, like, kind of making fun of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, hey, you give me the dissertation about the $600 driving shoes, and you're getting lapped on the first lap by Wanda Sykes, you know? And at some point, he sent me a tweet, and he was like, hey, man, what's with all the hate or whatever? And I didn't write back like, yeah, because you're a douchebag and you got expensive shoes and you're rich and blah, blah, blah. I just wrote him back like, yeah, I get it. Like, I sometimes I have to tell people I make fun of people for a living and include my own family and myself and that group. But I get it if somebody like said, well, what's Carolla like talking shit about his shoes for? Like, and I just went, sorry, I get why you're pissed. And let's put this behind us. And he like tweeted back like, yeah, cool, I get it. And then like a year later, he was dead.
Oh,
he just died. He just died. Like, I don't know, when did he died? 4 years ago? Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah. So he tweeted you, I was going to respond to Adam Carolla remarks on the radio today, but I'm glad I left a lasting impression. # real story later. And Adam responded, sorry for that. I didn't mean to sound so douchey. And he wrote, ha, the best, loved meeting you. And you guys said, hope you're well, thanks.
And then he died. So
I hope not from bad circulation.
If I that's the worst, that's the poorest of all tastes, Joe.
Oh my God.
And I remember thinking when I heard he died, I was like, oh. And then I remember thinking, oh, good, I didn't write back something douchey, you know. And then exactly. He didn't fire back something douchey, and I wouldn't have that floating around and my karma dream catcher. You know, I was like, I wrote back like, sorry, I was a douche. And he went, yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
And a year later, he just died. It was, I don't know, 49 or, you know, what, 47? I mean, it wasn't old. And I don't know. Keep that in mind, people, sometimes. You know, people eventually die, sometimes sooner than later. And maybe you don't want that on your permanent record.
Jeez, what a bummer.
I know, but it's a life lesson. How old was he?
Let me find out.
Also, it's always sadder when heirs to fortunes die. Like if a Corolla bites the dust, well, what'd he miss out on? Well, his dad had a sofa that converted into a bed.
Ooh.
But that's about it.
It was used.
But, you know, when you're Lay's potato chips or the Doritos chick or I don't know.
The Doritos chick?
I don't know. There's got to be.
Funyuns for life.
Yeah.
Somebody like out there. Mars family, the chocolate people.
Bob Bugles or somebody like that. I mean, that's a real goddamn shame, man.
Yeah.
How old was he?
44.
Oh, wow.
That is bad.
It's young.
Leukemia.
Oh, see? Now I'm glad. Now I'm glad I didn't give him a douchey tweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about fuel. I got some fuel questions. But first, I'm going to tell you about Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off dry cleaning, you pick up some milk, and now you can add saving hundreds of dollars of car insurance on that list. You don't have to pick up or drop off anything. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Check out geico.com.
So you got fuel questions.
I have fuel questions because fuel seems to be changing and there's all kinds of politics involved.
I've set a personal record with interactions with Jay Leno without him complaining about fuel.
What?
He
hates ethanol.
I've spoke to him like seven times and he hasn't complained about fuel, and that's the longest we've ever made it.
If you bring ethanol near him, he starts to kneel down and shrink up like Superman with kryptonite.
That is, because it is. It's like kryptonite to carburetors, right? He has a couple of cars that have carburetors, so yeah.
He changes fuel lines on some of the vintage cars like every 2 years just in case.
Oh, yeah. I know the guy that Mike Pierce at Pierce Manifolds that does a bunch of the carburetors for Jay for his collection. He's like, oh, yeah, he has to come down here and do it himself because he's like, this is such a big, giant problem with ethanol in the fuel.
Yeah. So tell us why. Explain to that. Why ethanol? Why do we have it? Why do we hate it?
Well, basically, for you have ethanol in the fuel for emissions reasons. It's an oxygenate. It helps lower emissions. The downside is ethanol is hygroscopic, which is a fancy word for means it absorbs moisture. So especially down like, say, the South Coast area here, where you have a lot of ambient humidity, it can absorb the moisture, and then that mixture of ethanol and water becomes corrosive. Especially with any, you know, the older carburetors are made out of magnesium and aluminum and steel and those kind of parts like that. Well, there's no method to test for corrosion for those. So even in the fuel spec, it says, okay, oxygenated blends can cause corrosion on things made out of magnesium, aluminum, zinc, and steel. Well, that's what carburetors are made out of.
Right.
You know, so it's a problem. The biggest issue now, I mean, we've had ethanol in the fuel for a long time. The biggest issue is just last week, the administration announced they were going to allow year-round sale of E15. Mm-hmm. So the maximum we had before was E10. Now they're allowing to go up to E15.
Is that a 15%?
15% ethanol. Mm-hmm. So we're going from 10% ethanol to a maximum of 15%. And now who knows how long it's going to take for that to roll out. The trick is technically E15 is illegal to be used in any car built before 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, any kind of power equipment and things like that. So there's like a date for it, a range, but no one knows that. So like this is the kind of public service message right now. Hey, everybody listening, if you have a car and it's an older car, or especially you have a lawnmower or snowblower or whatever, you should not go buy E15 and use it because it's going to blow it up. You know, mainly because the more oxygen you put in there, you have to change the jetting of the carburetor to accommodate for the increased oxygen. You got to add more fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But for EPA reasons, all the carburetors and the power equipment things today, they're all fixed jet. Yeah. You can't change it.
Oh.
So everything is going to run lean?
Uh-huh, and blow up.
Yeah.
So, Matt, other things to discuss, the new Ford Ranger. 150 accessory options?
Yeah.
Where is that new Ford Ranger? Is it in Europe? Is it here? I haven't seen one.
It's like everywhere but here. It's on its way here.
I'm excited about this.
Starting to take orders.
When I was a young buck swinging a hammer, when a guy would pull up in a new Ford Ranger, that was a big deal. Yeah. They made it in a great blue back in the day. It was a cool
truck.
They did
make a teal.
It had a V6 in it. Yeah. You know, it was just I dug that old Ranger back in the day.
Oh, they're going to have EcoBoost engines in them now. They're going to have four-cylinder EcoBoost, and they're going to do a Ranger Raptor.
Mm-hmm.
What size would it what year? Here's an interesting thing for Max Zapata to spend his computing on. What size is this Ford Ranger compared to an F-150? What year? Is it the size of a 93 F-150? Because now F-150s are, everything keeps getting bigger.
Bigger, yeah.
Right.
If you think of like a 2001 to 2004 Ford Lightning, mm-hmm. you know, with the 5.4 liter supercharged, I bet the Ranger's as big as that.
Probably so.
Because that wasn't a big truck.
That thing looked big in the picture.
Yeah, it looked big in the picture.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of cabs and long beds and stuff, I guess, options as well.
I'm sure there's going to be several configurations, and I think the base engine's going to be like a 2.3 liter EcoBoost, which is similar to the engine in the Mustang EcoBoost.
They're going to sell a lot of those units, right?
I think they are. I think they're going to sell quite a bit. Because
Dennis Leary's got a boner. It's more VO work for
more
him.
More VO work. Oh, no, Brian Cranston's doing Ford commercials now.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Cranston's doing it.
Actually, The Rock did Ford commercials for a while. You know? Really? Like, he was standing in the service department. Remember, he was like...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. He was. He did do those.
Yeah.
All notable non-car guys.
Talk about tires and stuff. Jesus, we talk
Christ.
About it. There's Hobbs versus Shaw coming out.
Oh, that's true.
It's the Fast and Furious spinoff.
How about some updates on the Acura NSX?
Well, the
and
NSX,
when is that Ford Ranger coming out, Max Zapata? Can we figure it out?
Yeah, let me. I'm looking at sizes right now.
So while he's figuring it out, I got a backstory for you.
Just go wheelbase
on the Garb. Mm-hmm. So when I was little, my dad was, you know, a go-kart racer and world champion and all of this. And we go start racing when I was, you know, 8 years old and get my racing helmet, right? And I've got this open-faced helmet. This is like, you know, 1978, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the bubble goggles. Well, all the cool kids had like the Scott, you know, motocross goggles.
Sure.
Right? Or they had the you know, closed-face helmet. And I'm like, Dad, I want that. I'll go faster. And he's like, son, no. that does not make you faster. When you go out there and you go fast and you win and your head grows, then you can get a new helmet. But, you know, the Scott goggles are not going to make you faster than wearing bubble goggles.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
It's funny. If you look at some of my...
Cole Trickle had the bubble goggles.
He did have the bubble goggles.
Everyone had the bubble goggles back in the day.
Yep.
The if you look at some of my Paul Newman racing helmets, he'll have the PLN written sort of outlined on the side of the helmet, not filled in, but you know. And he wore the goggles, the Scott goggles, outside the helmet.
Yeah.
And you see where the PLN is worn off because of the strap or the elastic of the Scott goggles going around the outside of the helmet.
Yeah.
See, cool guy.
He didn't
Paul Newman.
Cool guy didn't wear the bubble goggles. Right. Like the losers.
Yeah.
Wheelbase, Max Zapata. What do you think?
Well, it's 127 wheelbase, but Ford F-150, I mean, they give me a range from like 110 to 157.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's right.
What were they in 1991?
Okay, let me check.
Well, because you're looking for the year it matches up, right?
Yeah. So I'm just going like 90. I checked 99, but let me check 91.
Tell me what the wheel was in 91, or find the one that's closest to it, and we'll find out when it passed.
Yeah. 92 is 116 to 155.
What's the Ranger now?
127.
Oh, okay, so it's right in there.
Yeah. Right.
10 inches longer.
Yeah. Right, but we don't know exactly what the configurations are. You're looking
at
the
long bed super cab, whatever, versus standard, whatever. I think, Max Bat, if you want to help your cause, I think you'd have to go standard bed, standard cab, F-150, and we'll
find out what year. Is some of the specs you're looking for, the brand new Ranger might not be available in the U.S. You'd have to find, like, Ford Australia or something.
They're bringing back the Bronco, too, right?
Yeah.
As well. I shouldn't say two.
And I don't know.
No,
that's right.
No one likes that car.
Don't say that. And I don't...
They must coach everybody up. Yeah. Like, when I did Loveline on MTV,
yeah,
they would always say, like, you know, don't talk, don't say, like, these kids are fucking in bathrooms and stuff like that. You go, these young people, like, these don't say kids.
Yeah.
It freaks people out. You know what I mean? Like, if you're talking about a 17-year-old, don't say kids.
Don't say kids.
Say young people. And they must coach them up at four. Don't go Bronco two
like,
as well. Yeah. Say as well.
Yeah. That's right. Every press announcement must be they start with the Bronco. And then they could say, we have a Ranger as well, or Ranger 2, which is fine, but you can't say Bronco 2. Right?
So, only one wheelbase size for all the Rangers.
So the Ranger, makes you're sense. Right. So the Ranger may just be in like a four-door, like the Tacoma is currently. Right. Yeah, just, you know, something like that.
Yeah, they have different cab and bed options.
Are they doing a monocoque? Not a monocoque, but you know what I mean? Are they going frameless like the Ridge line or something?
You can't
something
say
like
monocoque.
That?
You have to say single unit. No, you can't say unit either. I don't know.
flight deck.
Flight deck? Yeah. Yeah.
You can't say cockpit.
That's a good question. Is it a unibody vehicle or is it a framed vehicle?
I bet it's unibodied.
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because it's American and it's a truck, but I just feel like the way it's shaping out to be sort of reminds me of the Honda Ridgeline.
Yeah.
And I just think at some point they're just going to go unibody, but they can't boast about twin I-beam suspension.
Well, I mean, guess you can. So, yeah, but you can't be like, you know, the Chevy commercials, like, we're on a full steel frame.
Right.
You know, ladder frame.
Well, it's always funny because Ford would brag about having like an aluminum truck.
Exactly.
And then Ford would be like, then Chevy'd be like, we dumped cinder blocks into the back of a Ford. Look what it did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, be a little more tasteful about how you chuck those cinder blocks at your truck. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, how about you stack them back there or put them on a pallet? how about that novelty? A pallet.
Yeah.
Just, of course, you just dump them from, you get a 12-foot A-frame ladder and load up your truck by throwing cinder blocks off the ladder at the bed of the truck. It's going to cause some damage.
Right. Like, yeah, we got to, let's move all this stuff out of the parking lot, put it in the back of the truck. But first, let's all haul it to the roof of the building
and
then throw it down and put it in there because,
yeah,
you know, that's what everybody in a Chevy commercial does.
I don't know. I can't figure out if I like those commercials where the guy's handing the truck down to his son. You know, like he's a little weathered.
Yeah.
Truck's a little weathered. Got 200 miles on it. Ranch miles. He's giving the keys to his boy. His boy's pretty beaked up about a truck that's not going to get him laid.
No.
You know?
He's like, I just want to get off this goddamn farm.
Silverado from the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm like,
exactly.
That's not going to get you a blowjob. not in these times. NSX, new
NSX.
Updates.
So,
2019.
Yeah. So what we saw when we went to the Acura / Jewel party.
Mm-hmm. Jewel the singer.
Yeah.
Perform.
They were announcing a new NSX. You
yeah.
were distracted by the Jewel.
I gotta tell you, I was impressed by Jewel, but everyone was smitten.
Yeah,
my son was like, "Ooh, who is this vision? Who's doing more talking than singing?"
Yeah.
Wait, the Rangers? What? It's frame based. Sorry.
Yeah, it's frame based, old fashioned.
So American. Yeah.
So American.
All right. Yeah.
So
they revised
NSX.
The suspension on the NSX. They did a little bit of aero, and they wanted to tighten up the suspension and put on a grippier tire, and it results in roughly 50% better lap times. Now, not necessarily 0 to 60 time, because they
sure.
didn't really change any of the power, but
right.
they're trying to up their game. And I've said it 100 times on this show, like, they've only sold like 1,000 NSXs. It's not necessarily a huge success for them, but I think it's such a good car. It's just such an easy daily supercar hybrid to drive
around.
Well,
in a weird...
It's a little on the high side of price, but you get on the forums and people are saying that, hey, they're going into dealers and they're negotiating, you know, $30,000 off sticker.
It's
wow.
it's a little bit like the McLaren versus the Ferrari is the NSX versus, I don't know, Porsche or even McLaren or something, which is... It's a little sterile, and it just works. but it's missing a little the je ne sais quoi, you know what I mean? A little of the flair that some of the Italian cars or whatever, just whatever makes a sports car beyond the numbers.
Yeah. And you get in it feels like an Acura.
But the McLaren, you can kind of, I mean, Senna aside in a few models, but McLarens you can kind of make that argument for too. It just works. It's not a bunch of, it doesn't move your soul. It just works.
Right.
And so I guess you have to kind of figure out, like, are you the loafer guy? Or are you the bubble goggle guy?
Exactly.
Because the bubble goggle guy wants the NSX.
Yeah. Right. He's going to get it done.
Yeah. The loafer guy wants the red Ferrari with the tan interior, right?
You need to get into, like, electric motor lubrication business. There's the future. I don't know what it's for. I don't know how it works. But there's a future there available, I think, because, you know.
I was thinking about that, too. Yeah.
You know?
All right, let's see. Me, Phoenix Stand Up Live, that's tomorrow night. Basic cable commentary up on stage, two shows. Adam Ray, very funny comedian. If you guys are car people, you remember we went to the Peterson and he was the stand up for the whatever Driven for Excellence award, whatever the steering wheel plaque I got back there.
Yeah.
He was doing the stand up that night.
That's right.
Yeah, he's great.
You sat there and judged him with your judgy eyes.
I know. These corporate gigs, man. Corporate gigs are tough. It's not your crowd. And he went up there and made John Lasseter laugh. And
I remember that.
Bruce Meyer
laugh. He kept looking down at you like for this sign of approval. It was super awkward sitting next to you for that.
We're going to do
it was fun. He
basic
did a great job.
Cable commentary. We'll do Red Dawn and Cobra and Roadhouse and Karate Kid. It's all going to be there. Also, Anaheim Grove, November 30th, up on stage with Rob Riggle doing a live pod there. Go to adamcarolla.com for all the stuff you need. Check out Driven Racing Oil, the website, drivenracingoil.com, and you can do the speed diagnostics there, right? You can find out about it.
Different website.
Different website.
Yeah,
all right.
Two different companies. Websites.
Then go to Speed Diagnostics with an X at the end and 1D, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And we'll put links up on the website for this one.
We'll put links up.
Up on CarCast Show.
Yeah, and you can check out Adam Carolla Goes Racing, Goldberg's Crashing, the aftermath of him crashing.
All 7 episodes are up there now.
Uh-huh.
Check it out.
Yeah, motortrend.com/Adam and go to Vero, too. That's good stuff, and we're going to really cool events. I mean, most of you can't get to Goodwood or Rennsport. I mean, you can get there with us, and we're going, and we're capturing it, and yeah, I get it. It's expensive. It's far away. It's whatever. But if you're a real car guy, it's not to be missed.
No. Yeah. Rennsport was amazing.
Rennsport
was great. That was amazing.
Yeah, so much fun.
Oh, I know. It's just it's mind-numbing. And Goodwood is next level. Either Goodwood or all three now of the Goodwood events. I think they have the Goodwood members meeting or something. They added a third.
That's another
Goodwood. So anyway, go to motortrend.com/Adam or Vero, V-E-R, and you can check out the seasons over there and load it in your phone and blah, blah, blah. And Shift and Steer live from SEMA every day coming up. You'll be at the Magnaflow booth.
Yep.
You can listen to that on Podcast One and check out Chassis, 2 S's and a Y. We got a lot of good racing docs, motorcycle docs there, and support the show. Check out the website, carcastshow.com, and follow along. And until next time, it's Adam Crawford, Lake Speed Jr., and Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Stick around for the AP News.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.